I can't believe you guys don't know this stuff backwards and forwards by now.
And what if they ask it sideways?
Brenda doesn't like surprises. And Steve doesn't like beating a dead horse.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 25, Meeting Mr. Pony. Yes, that's right. You heard it right. Meeting Mr. Pony. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano, and they're Deep Bunting. Something happened with my mouth. Not happy about it.
That's what she said. Hi, Tara, Dave.
Hi, Sarah.
Can we do a little bit of site business before we get into Meeting Mr. Pony?
Oh, yeah.
Not a euphemism.
Of course.
All right. First of all, we'd like to remind you again that ads are for sale on this and the main podcast, Extra Heart Rate. Go to previously.tv/ads. Right?
Yep.
And get all the deets there. If you have any questions, feel free to ask us. It's $50 for a personal type, happy birthday wish type ad, $100 for commercial ads. Second thing is, as you listen to this, it is Thanksgiving week. We are in thanks for Beverly Hills 90210 and America, in that order, are going to a modified schedule. There will be one Again With This on Thanksgiving week and one the following week to celebrate Tara's birthday.
Thank you. Then we'll
resume normal Again With This activity.
Yeah, so it'll be two a week again starting on December the 7th.
Correct.
Yes. All right, let's go. Let's get into this.
Yeah.
let's start it so we can finish it.
Oh, God.
Meeting Mr.
Steve Pony. Doesn't like to beat a dead horse, eh? Didn't write this episode then, did he?
His and is barely in it.
I know. It really suffers.
I agree. I agree, shockingly. In this one, Meeting Mr. Pony, we basically just have an A/only story, and it is trouble at the Peach Pit. Not that it's getting shut down again. This is actual trouble where someone might die. Not Brandon, unfortunately.
Is it Laverne?
Oh, no.
Before we started this, I really thought that Lavoine was Lavoine, her response
you.
To this.
Yeah, I could see that.
Oh, no, I'm dying already.
Yeah,
don't
well...
do that again.
We'll get to it. So as we open, it's midterms. Brenda and Dylan are at the Walsh House studying and Frenching periodically. She is annoyed that he keeps trying to stick it in her, basically. And he accuses her of studying, quote, all the time, end quote, which we've seen no evidence of before this episode, by the way. And she proposes relocating somewhere very well lit. He's scared that she means the library, which was kind of funny. But of course she does not. She means the Peach Pit. And when they get there, Brandon and Andrea and Steve are also studying for midterms. Nat says he loves midterms because the place fills up with kids and he has foreshadowy problems with the cash register when Kelly comes to check out and mention her mother's meeting with the wedding planner. I don't know why they plant the seeds for this so far in advance. I thought that there was going to be a whole like B story about the wedding planner in this episode. There totally isn't. There's just that mention.
What? Much like The Wire, Beverly Hills 90210 likes to set stuff up for the long game and doesn't treat its audience like they don't know what they're doing. So, you know, when Stringer Bell comes back and does this and that, and when, you know, Peach Pit comes back and mm-hmm. has, this happens to it,
yeah.
You're rewarded as a smart and true fan of Beverly Hills 90210.
You know,
thanks, writers.
People do
I'd like
say...
to salute Dave Cole for getting through that without laughing. It was about to happen like three different times, but he completed that comment without laughing.
I'm a pro.
Good job.
Yeah, you are. So later, the diner closes. Steve and Andrea leave. Brenda wants 15 more minutes to study like she can't study at home, whatever. And Brandon rooks Dylan into helping him with the recycling. And the door jingles. Andrea comes in to get Steve's Cliff's notes off the counter.
Of course she does.
In this weird, please go to the visual aids to see her weird skating costume.
Also,
what?
Cliff notes. Remember Cliff notes? I mean.
They're still a thing.
Are they?
I think
in the internet age? I doubt it.
They still exist.
CliffsNotes.com.
Oh, okay. But you can't go, you don't go to Walden Books and buy yourself a Cliff Notes. Or if you're in Canada, Cole's Notes from the 80s.
No relation. Oh. No relation to you.
Yeah.
Alas. No, I'm pretty sure you could still buy them.
Yeah.
I bet you can.
okay, then who's buying them? Who would buy
the same note? People that always bought them? Idiots.
Yeah, I guess. I guess if you need help getting slogging your way through Hamlet, you might not know that you can just go on the internet and get the same stuff as Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
Which is my point.
Uh-huh.
On with the show.
Okay,
but
thank
can you.
Can
you fit the internet in the pocket of your cargo pants? Oh, wait. Yeah, you can now. Okay. Ask your parents. Moving on.
Outside, Brent, anyway, Andrea's outfit, weird, like, black skating costume with, like, a tie sweater bolero situation over it in white, and the black dress has, like, white piping. It really does look like a skating costume. I'm not kidding. Please go see it.
I really had trouble. I know we still haven't even played a clip. I'm going to let that happen. But my notes for that outfit read, like when D3, my nephew, puts clothes on upside down. Like, it looks like she had the shirt. You know when little kids do that and you're like, that could work, except what's wrong here? That outfit is like that. I was like,
yeah.
Where are those drop crotch skirt pants? What is happening?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not even sure. I said I have dress, but I'm not sure if it even is a dress. It could be a romper. Well, please go look at the visual aids and tell us what you think. I always feel like that about black under white. But that's just me. Anyway, we really are getting way off topic. Outside, Brandon and Dylan are dicking around with recycling. And then inside, we see Brenda suddenly seem to become aware that she's all alone. And when the door jingles again, she doesn't even look up because she assumes that it's Andrea again. It is not, as we hear in clip number two.
You do what I tell you, and you won't get hurt. Do you understand? Do you understand?
Put the gun down, okay?
Mary, do you understand me, do you?
Yes.
Is there anyone else here? Answer me!
Yes.
Where?
Out back.
You scream. You die. Go open the register. Hurry up!
Okay, just be cool, all right?
Hurry up! What's wrong?
I'm not! Next, I'm dying!
Oh, well, I guess I'll just have to open it.
No!
Good girl. Put the money in the bag. Faster! Cute. You don't say thank you when someone pays you a compliment. I can't hear you.
Okay, so this is like some junkie kid who looks really convincingly pasty, I have to say. Unlike the junkies at the rave, he looks legitimately fucked up to me.
Yeah, as is his acting. Way, way over the top, suicidal Matthew Perry styles.
Yes.
But I have to give it to Shannon Doherty. Like, we have some visual aids of the ugly crying that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
She is going there.
She really does go for it. You're so right. And she it doesn't seem cartoony at all. Like, it reads very real to me.
Yeah, me too.
Especially since he comes in there with really a way bigger gun than is necessary for the job of knocking over a diner with a teenager in it. Like, it's a sawed-off shotgun, right? Or some kind of
I don't know
either.
It looked like some made up, like, I mean, they clearly made it in
right.
the prop shop, but it reminded me of the scene in Johnny Dangerously where they're going to the electric chair and he's just like building it out of the parts that the prisoners are handing him, including like a pipe and there's like a tricycle wheel. But yeah, it's way too much gun. Like, even though it looks fake to us,
yeah,
it's way too much gun. And in some shots, it's really looming like mm-hmm. into her face, like in a first person shooter. It's pretty intense, actually.
It is. It's like, it's actually scary. They could have made this more cartoony than they did, but I think other than the giant gun, they had some restraint. Anyway, the robber
in this part anyway.
Exactly. So the robber orders Brenda down on the floor and makes her start counting as he takes off. And then we cut back to the alley where Brandon and Dylan are still playing grab ass. And when they finally come back in, they see the aftermath of the robbery and find Brenda rocking herself in the corner, which again, really well handled. Doesn't seem like she's hamming it up, like just seems very scared for real. And I thought she did a nice job in that scene, as you said.
Yeah, me too.
So later, a detective is getting everyone's story and is kind of disdainful of Brandon and Dylan. Clip number three.
Now, you two were out in the back with the garbage.
That's gotta did it.
A lot of help we were, huh?
Don, if you were here, you might have just started shooting.
Brenda, if we were here, he wouldn't have come in the first place.
If he were here, he might have come in to shoot you specifically if he knows anything about you,
and
Brandon.
And then just leave.
Walsh.
To collect his presidential medal.
Yeah. I don't know what Brandon bases this on. Like his 2'3" ass is really protecting anyone from anything. But whatever.
Hey, he single-handedly stopped a mall.
That's true.
Maybe he can stop bullets with his mind or his Bray. He's the Braytrix.
Yeah, that's his X-Men mutant power. He just yells at things and they fall to the ground. Anyway, Nat, of course, is also there in civvies for like the first, maybe the second time we've ever seen him in, oh no, third. At the track, Christmas caroling, and now is, I think, the only time we've ever seen Nat out of his Peach Pit shirt. Anyway, he's blaming himself for not having put in a video camera. One of the cops says that what would have helped the most is if the door had been locked, which everyone just breezes past, when in fact this whole thing is all Brandon's fault for being irresponsible and not locking the door when the Peach Pit was closed. Hello? It never comes up again.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
It sounds like somebody in the writer room brought that up, and then they're like, well, we'll mention it, but we really got to get this story moving along.
I'm sure that's the case.
Neil.
That doesn't make it not bullshit, though. Neil. Fucking Neil.
Fucking
always
Neil in the writer's room, right, guys?
Anyway.
Although that's something that we always used to bitch about Felicity.
Yeah.
And then fucking Tag came in, shot the place up. Like, well, we told ya.
Right.
It is anyway. A city.
Nat is just happy, of course, that no one was hurt and says it's only money, but Brenda feels bad, and we hear a little of that in clip number four.
I'm sorry, Nat.
Why? Were you in on it? Did he steal my recipes? Okay, man, it's okay. It's okay.
I give Nat a lot of shit, but that was really sweet.
Yes, it was.
And you can hear the sound in the clip of him giving her a kiss on the cheek. Like, it's nice. He's around these kids more than their parents are, so it's good that he has this avuncular energy, at least now. Someone in the one of the threads for the last episode commented on Nat losing IQ points throughout the run of the show, which is true. But at this point,
he's
still doing well. So the detective tells Brenda that she did everything right. She preens like she does whenever anyone praises her for anything. And then her parents show up, and Brenda, who's been holding it together pretty well, crumbles, which again feels very real to me. As soon as she sees her parents, she just cracks. And
could be that skirt on Cindy, though.
True. So the Walshes are getting ready to go home and put this behind them, but clip number five.
Come on, honey. It's all over now.
Maybe not. Bren, where's your purse?
That is some Discovery Investigation soundtrack music.
The Deviant Stranger.
So at home, there's talk of changing the locks and debate over the robber even looked at anything in her wallet after taking the cash. Then we finally find out how the episode got its title in clip number six.
You know, baby, you're handling this whole thing like a trooper. We're very proud of you.
But we're not
Don't
surprised.
Call her
you
baby.
Mr. Pony.
Yeah.
Where is he anyway?
You know, you never unpacked that box. He's probably still in the garage.
Well, wait. Mr. Pony?
Well, when Brenda was little, she used to ride every weekend. And she adored it. Until the horse got stung by a bee and ran off at top speed.
Did she stay on?
No, I fell off hard in the grass.
Thank God nothing was broken. Except for her spirit.
Yeah, but I never ride again.
Oh, she didn't even want to look at another horse.
So Dad went out and bought her a little stuffed Miss Trapani. Mm-hmm. Gave her one of his famous Walsh pep talks, and lo and behold...
Very next weekend, she got back on the horse.
You got it.
Listen, it was a very telling thing. Showed what kind of character she had.
You guys, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, my bruises healed, and I remembered how much I loved to ride.
Well, this is a very similar situation, and we're all here to help you with it.
Well, I'm only worried about one thing.
What's that?
Well, since my license was stolen, does that mean that I have to take my driving test all over again?
Oh,
comedy.
Thank God. No, that is not what that means. Oh.
Yeah. But yes, as Sarah said, stop calling her baby. It's gross. But the rest of that, like, I mean, I'll get into this more later, but like all the stuff with the horse is brand new information that's never come up before, including when they went horseback riding in an earlier episode, but whatever.
Yeah. And we never see Mr. Pony again. But anyway.
So Brenda's getting ready for bed when Cindy comes in because she has dug out Mr. Pony from whatever box it was in and brings him to Brenda to sleep with. And she seems basically okay. But then she has a nightmare in which she gets up to go to the bathroom and the robber is in the doorway telling her she's cute, which I have to say, as TV dreams or nightmares go, is pretty legit in its banality. Like, it has the feel of, you know, oh, I just got up and then this crazy thing happened versus like... I mean, I was complaining about this to Dave recently about how dumb TV dream sequences are most of the time. Like, they just go way overboard. Like, it's a dream. Anything could happen. When, in fact, real dreams, in my experience, are more like this, usually.
Or, like, it gets to the nut of the matter of whatever is bothering you, like, in 2% of the dream. And the rest of it is total nonsense. Like, all the dreams I've been having recently have been like, I don't know where that came from. And there's, like, one little line in there. It's like, well, I guess that's something to do with me.
Right.
Yeah, but, yeah. Otherwise, it's just, like, it's some, like, Freudian, you know, on the nose kind of affair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the creepiest dreams to me anyway.
Oh, it's totally.
Like everything is completely normal.
And you're not wearing pants.
Anywho, the next day, Brenda hasn't come down yet for breakfast when Jim and Cindy in the kitchen start discussing a pamphlet on the counter, which we hear in clip number 7.
What's this, Women's Crisis Hotline?
Oh, the police inspector gave that to Brenda last night. I know she said she wasn't interested, but...
Until she says otherwise, let's not push it.
He said they were very helpful in dealing with this kind of emotional trauma.
Listen, you start using words like crisis and trauma to a suggestible kid like Brenda, she'll imagine herself crazy.
Maybe you're right.
Listen, she's got a lot of people around her who love and support her. She's going to come through this just fine.
Ugh, shut up, Jim. It's been a while since we've had Brenda's so dramatic. Brenda's so suggestible. Like, something legitimately terrifying and potentially fatal happened to her. Maybe let her have this one. Fucking Jim.
Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, Brenda
comes... At least you didn't have to replace her car again.
Brenda comes down sounding very chirpy and lies that she slept great. And she's, you can see in the visual aid, she's in this like green and white striped top. And I don't know what it is about this color, but it really is her color. Like, it makes her face look great. It really picks up her eyes.
Huh. I thought the exact opposite. I thought it was giving her this like Munstery cast that I was like, yeah, that's not like the outfit is cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the little bodysuit A-line skirt combo that I had a million of. Shouldn't have. It's not a good look for me, but I had them.
Yeah.
And she has like cute hair all episode. We're right in Brenda peak hair, I would say. But I didn't. That's interesting.
Hmm.
That should be a good color for her, but it was not. Maybe it was the stripes.
Perhaps.
Know.
Well, I cut it for the visual aid, so go check it out and tell us which one of us is right.
Yes, vote.
Team green, team not green. At school, Brenda has just finished telling Donna the story. Donna, of course, makes it about herself. But what would have happened if she'd been there? Blah, blah, blah. And Steve finds Brenda in the hall and is like uncharacteristically serious and concerned about her, which is, you know, sweet. He's so concerned, as Sarah clipped in the visual aids. His pocket flap is standing at attention for the moment. But Brenda's not trying to hear any of their concern, and she blows him off. And then Brenda finds Dylan at his locker and pretends to stick him up with a finger gun. Reasonably, he seems weirded out by the choice, but she says you have to keep your sense of humor. Dylan is sad and worried, and Brenda is touched, and they kiss, but it takes her back to the moment when they were kissing at the peach pit right before everything happened, and blah, blah, blah. She has a flashback. Later, Brenda keeps imagining triggering noises when she's in study hall, taking her back to the robbery, and is trying to shake it off as Andrea comes in and starts chattering about the report she just filed in clip number 8.
I told the inspector I only got a glimpse of the guy as I was getting into Steve's car and that it was kind of dark outside the peach pit. But if your guy was wearing a gray shirt and a baseball cap, it could have been the same one. Well, probably was. Did your guy have brown hair? You know what? I don't remember, and he isn't my guy. I didn't mean it that way. Look, I know. It's just that I'm trying to forget about this and get on with my life, and it's impossible to do that with everyone yammering at me everywhere I go. Like, it's a bigger deal than it is. I'm sorry. It's not like I'm going crazy. I know that.
This crazy.
It's a weird way for, I mean, I know Andrea's most of the time like oblivious and pushy, but given her rap line background, her obliviousness in this case is out of character, I thought.
And haven't we not that long ago gone through like the post-gun, not etiquette, but like Dead Scotted himself, what, like 3 months ago in Showtime?
Yeah.
Like, guys, remember? Like, back off a little, maybe? Mm-hmm. Don't always be a reporter, Andrea.
Perhaps. But anyway, moving on. Everyone finds themselves in the hallway later. Callie wants to blow off school because everyone's being so serious about exams. Brandon tells Brenda to get a ride home from someone else because he's got to go to work. Donna doesn't want to go to the peach pit, but lets everybody else talk her into getting back on the horse and not punishing the restaurant because of what one robber did, except for Brenda, who awkwardly says that she has something else to do. And then Andrea, after her run-in with Brenda in study hall, finds Brandon in the hall to express concern about Brenda in clip number 9.
Do you think Brenda's doing okay?
Yeah, as well as can be expected. Why, you don't think so?
Well, on the surface, everything seems okay, but why doesn't she want to talk about it?
Well, no offense, Andrea, but maybe she just doesn't want to talk about it with you.
Asshole.
Just as long as she talks to somebody.
Yeah, offense. Offense taken, you dick.
Yeah, not. Why do you have to be such a tool all the time?
She's trying to help your sister, who is probably more upset than she's letting on, because every man in her family is reinforcing the idea that she just needs to shake it off. So maybe give...
Otherwise, she's hysterical.
Yeah. So... Or dramatic or suggestible. Like, God. Anyway, Andrea definitely absorbs this much better than I would have or did just now. And although he has a point that maybe she doesn't want to talk to Andrea specifically, he obviously could have found a more tactful way to say it, which is true of almost everything he says about anything ever. That night, there's normal Walsh kid negotiations over borrowed piece of clothing. Brenda is organizing her wardrobe instead of studying. Brandon compliments her for being a very strong person, but then brings up what Andrea said, and Brenda says she doesn't want to be a burden and doesn't want anyone's pity for sure. And that night, Brenda has another dream about the robbery. In this one, she knows what's going to happen and tries to stop Dylan from going outside. And she screams in the dream and wakes up sweating and unsettled. And the next day, Cindy is very concerned about Brenda and for some reason has sent Jim in to deal with her when he's already the least sensitive person in the house, which is saying something. And he walks in and finds Brenda's whole room in a shambles and Brenda buzzing around like a meth head. And she's saying that she can't go to midterms if she can't find anything to wear. Jim tries to act like the issue is just her getting dressed, which it obviously is not. But Cindy suggests that they call the school and get her exam rescheduled, which, like, okay, I guess. I mean, it is midterms. But anyway, at school, Brenda sits down for her first exam. The teacher is one of the medical examiners from CSI, the guy with, I think his name is Robert David Hall.
Correct.
When he used canes. And he hits a bell on his desk to start the exam, and it sends Brenda back into another version of the robbery in clip number 10.
You do what I tell you, you won't get hurt. Understand?
No, I don't. I never did anything to you. I was just trying to take my test.
You scream, you die. Now open the register. Quit stalling! My woman
time's up.
Don't go back!
So that's Brenda coming out of this fantasy screaming in real life. Kind of disruptive. Although understandable. She loses her shit and takes off running into the hall with Dylan chasing after her to try and calm her down.
That was a pretty good moment. I don't know if you gift this, but it's sort of funny. You can see that like they just waxed that hallway and the actors are really trying not to spin out physically while they're rounding the corner. But then once again, Shannon Doherty is like really freaking out. Like, you really believe it. They're both pretty good in that scene, even though like this is now what feels like the 18th flashback, and you know, shows that used to be whatever 46 47 minutes long, these flashbacks go on. Like, now they just give you a little like blipfert
a
flashback, which I was really longing for this to be a CW show that was like 38 and a half minutes, because it's like, oh my god, we get it. I could pick this guy out of a lineup. I could draw him for the lineup. Get on with it. But then at the same time, she's really good. So it's both a boring episode and impressive for Shannon Doherty. So
This clearly is like her Emmy real moment, and she goes for it, and she does really well, I think. And every time the flashback happens, it's like a tiny bit different, where she's imagining like, what if this had happened? So, you know, that makes it a little bit interesting, but only a little, because the rest of it is very repetitive. Anyway, Brenda in the hall is very upset about her inability to control her thoughts. And that night, Cindy and Jim come to check on her. She's already in bed with Mr. Pony, and it's like dinner time, which, been there. not because I was upset, just because I'm so lazy. Jim asks her if she wants to come down for dinner. She says she's not hungry. Cindy apparently told Jim what happened at school, as we hear in clip 11.
Guess you're real disappointed in me, huh?
No. Not at all. But we have to deal with this. The last thing I want you to do is to go around pretending that things are okay when they're not.
Finally.
You know, I try not to think about it. I know I shouldn't. But I keep on playing it over and over again in my head, wondering what I could have done differently. I just feel so stupid. Because I can't let it go.
Honey, why didn't you say something earlier?
I'm so ashamed for letting it get to me like this.
Well, maybe it seems worse than it is because you're fighting it so hard.
I thought it would get better. I really did.
It's been 2 days.
Seriously?
I thought the memory would fade.
2 days.
Every little sound just brings it back.
To 36 hours ago.
No, seriously.
It just gets more gruesome each time.
Gruesome?
Yay.
You know, the other day, your mother suggested we get you some counseling to help you deal with what happened. And I guess I wanted to believe that with all our love and support, that you just pick yourself up and get on with things.
Yeah, you made that clear.
That's what I wanted. I mean, that's what I was trying to do.
I know. But sometimes, even family and friends aren't enough, Brenda.
Even Brandon? Even if Brandon Walsh is in your family, he's not enough? What?
He's probably busy picketing something with a cute girl he's not related to.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, I think that speech is well handled, particularly Jim's side of it, which, like, he's trying not to let his bias show, but it's clear that he doesn't want her to be dwelling on this either. Like, not that she does, but he just wants her to, like, get over it. She can't.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty, I thought this was pretty true to, like, how dads are sometimes a little, especially dads of a certain age, that if you're, like, I want to go talk to someone, they're like, all your friends. And it's like, I mean, someone who has a big fancy degree. They kind of don't know how to manage that exactly. They just want you to be happy, and they want you to be more dad-like about it because that's what they understand. So I thought that was sort of smartly done.
Well, but that's true. That's true now. Like, it was even more so, you know, psychiatry has been way more normalized in the past 23 years than it was when this
happened. Totally. That's what I was going to say next. Is that once again, we were back into, like, this, the show having to kind of repeatedly contextualize her going to a shrink and that David right. went, but only a couple times, and his parents made him, and it's like, all right, like,
yeah,
settle down. But then it really was like, this is before Prozac Nation and any of that, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was before, like, even Dr. Phil on TV. Like, this was it was a real different era. Not that Dr. Phil is a therapist, but you know what I mean. Anyway. Brenda is, that's an understatement. That'll be the poll quote
of the week.
Brenda is disturbed that they want to send her to a shrink. Cindy reassures her that it's nothing to be embarrassed about. Brenda says she doesn't understand how a doctor could talk her out of having nightmares. And Cindy's like, well, I made an appointment. And Jim is like, we can totally cancel it if you feel better. Like, no, Jim, let's just, I mean, whatever.
Because
like,
then
I know
it will only
is...
have been 3 days ago, and that's not really how it works. Okay.
Yeah. So downstairs, Dylan calls Brandon at the Peach Pit to update him on Brenda's situation, and they compare notes on their own what if mental loops of, you know, how things went and their non-part and everything. And Brandon does not bring up the fact that he should have locked the door, but I will anyway. Then Brenda is sitting with her therapist in the weirdest, please look at the visual aids. They're like sitting side by side in armchairs. Like Brenda is basically looking over her shoulder at the psychiatrist.
Yeah, it's like through the wing of the chair. Like, is it inside the actor's brain studio? It's very weird.
It's so, and we never see a two shot of both of them, probably because like they built this set in like the corner of Brenda's bedroom or something. So it's like, we'll just shoot one of you at a time. It'll be fine. Whatever. Like you can't see anything of the room except for their two stupid chairs. Anyway, Brenda basically recaps what we know and the doctor reassures her in clip number 12.
You're not losing it, Brenda. You're having a perfectly normal reaction to an extraordinary experience. There's even a name for it. Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Whoop. What traumata was it? What?
Slower, please, and enunciate. And
that might be the
go.
First time I ever had heard that phrase, though, at the time. Like, it was not as much of a thing as it is now, for sure.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Anyway, the doctor
chill
says...
chill shock. Look right. it up. That's how you heard it before.
That's true.
Ask your grandparents.
Ask your Lord Grantham. the doctor says they're not going to solve this in an hour, but that they'll keep working on it. Brenda asks, what about the nightmares? And the doctor asks her to remember a time that she felt completely safe. She tells this horse story that is, again, 100% new information we've never had before this episode, including the one with Cousin Bobby when they went horseback riding. But whatever. The doctor tells Brenda to picture herself in the ring on her horse riding Sylvester, and they'll call it her safe place, but clip 13.
Oh, God.
He's there.
Where?
He's on my horse. He's in my safe place. I can't get him out of my head.
He's on my horse.
He's in my safe place. Anyone for a sandwich?
Oh my God. It's not supposed to be funny, but I made a gif of the moment where like you see like little Brenda and then all of a sudden the robber is behind her like shoving the gun in her face and her whole face looks, I can't describe it. Please go look at the gif because it's the most unintentionally hilarious thing about this episode, maybe this season actually. Anyway, it's not supposed to be funny, but it is. And the doctor promises that they will work on it. And, meanwhile, the gang is hanging out in the living room trying to act normal as they wait for Brenda to get back from her appointment. They are terrible, of course, at acting natural. Dylan and Brenda and Cindy come in as everyone tries to make it look like they've been playing Scrabble, but they haven't even managed to put real words together.
Cindy, once again, dressed for, you know, an evening with the pops to go to the doctor with her child. It's like,
yeah. And not only that, but it's like,
you have the mom jeans for this. Put them on.
Yeah, it's the doctor's not judging what you're wearing. It's fine. Also, it's like a black and fuchsia ensemble, so she looks like a couture Barbie of the era. It's weird. Brenda says that she feels better, but she's sheepish about all of this, even though she knows she shouldn't be, and the kids discuss it in clip 14.
Just weird going to a shrink. It's not as if I'm crazy.
Oh, well, I went to see a shrink once after my parents broke up. My dad made me, but it was no big deal.
Yeah, same here. It was during what my mom called my troubled years. It was before I knew you. Yeah, uh-huh. I used to bug my mom to take me to see one. But she said I had to come up with a good problem first.
How about you, Steve?
Stuff.
Yeah, well, okay, once or twice. But I didn't lie on a couch or anything.
Yeah, neither did I.
I would. I mean, it's more relaxing that way, easier to talk.
You've been too?
Well, no, but I've read a lot about it.
She's going to be the psychiatrist.
Andrea hasn't been to a psychiatrist. Don't you guys remember she lives in the valley? They don't
also
have psychiatry there.
Also, does anyone remember she teen rap line? It's like five scenes ago.
Mm-hmm.
No. Also, shut up, Brandon.
Yeah. Also, shut up, Brandon. Forever.
She'll be the psychiatrist. Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Well, and then, I mean, I'm glad I cut it off before she said, like, oh, I have thought about it. Like, yeah, shut the fuck up, Brandon. Some people have aspirations and things they're good at. You wouldn't know anything about it. So you can't be a pro hockey player because you missed your chance. Anyway, fuck. Cindy comes in as the phone rings. Brenda is saying that she's ready to put it all behind her. She wasn't ready to admit how horrible the experience was, but she wants to get on with her life. But uh-oh, clip 15.
Just a minute. Brenda, it's the police. They've picked up a suspect, and they want you to come down and look at a lineup today.
Brenda, that's great. I mean, that's your chance to nail this guy.
Really?
I can't go.
Brenda, you gotta do this.
Brenda, no, I don't have to, and I'm sorry, I can't.
She stomps out of the room, as you heard, and seriously, they hold on the kids sitting there looking awkward for like 35 seconds. Like, it's way too long.
And you know something? Both of you boys can shut the fuck up. Like, Dylan, don't put pressure on her to nail this guy. She's not a police officer. She survived. That was her job. She already did it.
Yep.
Bite me.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon, sit down. Nobody rang your buzzer. You were also not a police officer. You were outside crunching cans. Yes. Shut up.
Juggling, as I recall, while this was going on. And the reason it was going
Worst.
On is because you didn't
lock the door.
So after the commercial, Jim and Dylan are trying to mansplain to Brenda why she should go and look up a lineup, and Jim even tells her about the two-way glass like she's never seen a fucking TV show before. And the argument continues in clip 16.
Dad, don't you get it? I never want to see him again.
So you'd rather give him the chance to go do this to someone else?
No.
Shut
what's
going to
happen, Bren? I don't understand you.
Dylan, you weren't there. You didn't have a gun pointing at you. You were lying on the ground wondering if your head was going to get blown off.
Sweetheart, it's okay. You don't have to go if you don't want to.
Mom, I want to go. It's just that I'm scared.
Calm down, Bren.
Dylan, I don't want to calm down. I mean, can't I even get angry? You and Brandon. I mean, first you guys tell me you'll never leave me alone again. Then you put me on a pedestal or something, telling me how strong I am, how great I am, how brave I am. Well, I'm not. I am scared to death. And I'm sorry I'm yelling, but it's just how I feel, okay?
Okay.
Absolutely okay.
Also, don't be sorry. Fuck those guys.
Yeah,
Jesus
thanks,
Christ.
Gents. Thanks for signing off on her emotions.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad
it's really not her responsibility to stop a crime spree. What the fuck are you doing about it, Dylan?
At least she got this speech. I mean, I'm annoyed
That's
that
true.
They had to surround it with all this, like, but it's how I feel, and I'm sorry, and whatever. But
America is its strongest when its citizens do their duty. I learned that from Manhattan this week.
Well, they're doing some duty in this writing.
Oh!
Thanks,
Dylan,
Neil.
Here's the other thing that's annoying. Dylan was, like, normal and fine and supportive for 2/3 of the episode, and then because it was convenient, because
he turned into Brandon.
Speech.
Yeah.
Just give the douchey speech to Brandon. He's good at them.
Sadly, that is true. So after Brenda says this, Jim and Dylan both back down. And once they've acknowledged her feelings and that she is a person who is allowed to have them, Brenda's like, all right, let's go, which is kind of awesome. So then at the cop shop, the detective comes to bring Brenda to the lineup. And he also tells her about the two-way glass like she's not six.
We know.
In the room where they're going to watch these two guys. Now, listen, guys, she'll be able to see through the glass and the suspects and a bunch of decoys, but they will not be able to see her. Do you understand how this works? Detective Tube Sock, which we'll see, he's in the visual aids, Tube Socks with his black dress shoes, walks her through the procedure. our main detective tells her to clear her mind, and the guys all wander in dressed like her description. And with his hat off, the actual robber, who is number four, in case you're writing a book, kind of looks like a pastier Jason Segel. You can tell me in the visual aids if you agree. And when actually listening back to the clips without the visuals this time, he kind of sounds like him too a little bit. Anyway, Brenda is sitting at least 20 feet away from the glass as Detective Tubesock orders each guy in succession to step forward. And when number four comes up, Brenda stands when he takes his place, and obviously she can tell it's him. And after staring at him for a while, she identifies him dramatically in clip 17.
That's him. That's the one.
You sure?
Yes, I'm sure. That's him. That's the guy who held the gun to my head. I want you to put him away.
All right.
No, we thought we'd just let him slide.
But since you insist.
Yeah. So then the detective brings Brenda out and compliments her bravery. But before they go, she has a question in our final clip.
No.
Inspector.
Yeah.
Who is he?
What?
The guy who held me up. What's his name?
You don't need to know his name. He's just a strung-out 17-year-old.
He's only 17? That's my age. Thanks.
All right, take your tinkles and go home. That's enough.
Yeah. Also, that guy's really been doing all the drugs, if we're supposed to believe he's 17.
He is 31 if he's a minute.
At least.
So afterwards, Dylan brings Brenda back to the scene of the crime, literally. The door jingles, but inside everything is normal and people are enjoying themselves in a non-traumatic way. Nat, in particular, is happy to see her there, and Brenda takes her place with the gang. She says she's okay and she's actually really glad to be back, and they talk about midterms. Remember midterms? Steve jokes that he's not sure if he'd rather fail English or get held up at gunpoint. It's now really the time, Steve, but Brenda laughs, so I guess it's okay. She's going to be herself again after all. And later
and
still,
then she probably gets something on the house because Matt yes. has now been robbed. So he has even less money. But why not give people free pie like an idiot?
Yeah, she gets the special hero mega burger with two kinds of cheese. I don't know. Later still, Brandon says Brenda's getting ready for bed again. Brandon comes in and says he was glad to see her back at the Peach Pit. She says she's looking forward to getting a good night's sleep because I guess that's all it takes now that she knows the guy's arrested. Brandon starts to leave, but she asks for Mr. Pony, and then he brings it to her and gives her a barfy top of the head kiss. Let us never talk of that again. Why do they keep doing it? The end. Let's wrap it up. Episode Most Valuable Player. Brenda.
Yep, Brenda.
She's a champion, and Shannon Doherty, as we've said, acts the shit out of this part, and it's fun to watch that part, anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, not true. Fun, but, you know, it's satisfying to watch as opposed to when Donna tries to cry in our next episode.
Oh, God.
Least Valuable Player. You go
Brandon.
First. Because he didn't lock the door?
Because he didn't lock the fucking door. Yep. He can't juggle, and he tells her how to feel. Shut up, Brandon.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, maybe Dylan or Jim, but no, it's Brandon. You're totally right. And the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Five reasons from this episode that Dylan is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. He's dangerous in that he thinks he can legislate your feelings for you.
He takes forever to recycle, so he's killing the earth.
He's bad in that he doesn't respect your need to study for your fucking midterms and keeps trying to stick his tongue down your throat all the time.
He's dangerous to know because when he's chasing you after your flashback, he could go into a wipeout slide in the floor wax that takes you both out and breaks your hips.
And he's mad when he thinks that you're not going to go and pick a guy out of a lineup when that's 100% you're right, as we have both said. So shut up, Dylan. That makes
well
fun.
Said. That's another episode of Again With This. Next time, Donna, your parents are getting divorced because you were bad. At covering your butt cheeks, that is. Just kidding, it's the Color Me Bad episode with Cheat and Felice. You can sex up the visual aids for that episode and every other episode we cover at Again With This on previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previouslyTV. You can follow me at Tomato Nation and Tara at Tara Ariano. You can follow our producer, Dave, at Glark on Instagram and Twitter. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.